I'm Richard van den Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 171 for the weekend starting 17 March 2017.
Wow, that's a lot of sevens. Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, Turkinicor leaked 7 million users' account details, and we speak to the developer who exposed this major flaw on the company's website.
Also this week, the ANC to mull ways of reducing MultiChoice's dominance in pay TV, Swatch to make its own smartwatch OS, Celsius financial results, and the new MyTech Direct sound and technology superstore in Midrand. It's amazing.
Can't wait to check that one out. Time to breathe life into another podcast.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
Very good, thanks. Yeah, more on that MyTech store launch earlier this week, a bit later in the show, because it really is an amazing place. But let's get started, as we always do, with our quiz. Do you want to ask the first question?
Sure. First question in this week's quiz. Cell C reported a net profit for its 2016 financial year this week. How much was it? And we'll accept an answer to the nearest 100 million rand.
Cell C is interested in expanding its roaming agreement with Vodacom to include which mobile technology?
The third question. The Constitutional Court this week ordered which company to continue paying social grants for a period of 12 months, despite the contract being unlawful.
And the fourth question. Which politician this week found themselves in all sorts of hot water over a tweet about colonialism?
And the last question. Leaks have revealed the name of Samsung's AI assistant, which is expected to be introduced with the Galaxy S8 later this month. What do the leaks suggest it be called?
We'll get to our quiz results at the end of the show, but there is tons to talk about this week, plus a special guest on the show, which we don't do very often,
yeah. And
we probably should do more of. But before we get to him, let's start covering some of the news, and some big news out this week at the weekend. The ANC publishing discussion documents ahead of its big policy conference, which is happening at the end of June this year. And they included a section on communications, quite a detailed section on communications, which touches, unsurprisingly, I suppose, on the white paper and a lot of the aspects within the white paper, the National Integrated ICT Policy white paper, which we have covered in detail on this podcast and, of course, in many articles on Tech Central and opinion pieces, which we've taken from various sources over the last few months. But some interesting comments, which I thought might be worth a chat on this podcast today, regarding DStv and MultiChoice and opening up the market to greater competition. Now, they've, without providing a lot of detail, and I suppose it is a discussion document rather than a document of firm proposals, but they very clearly have set out a plan to discuss at this ANC conference ways of opening up the market to greater competition in that space. And they've made a number of comments, even admissions, I suppose, saying that, and I'll read here because it's an interesting one. In relation to television, efforts to license competition to the dominant subscription service have proven futile, and it seems there are limited or no prospects under current conditions of any new player successfully entering and competing against the existing monopoly due to its dominance. So they go on to talk about, they say that addressing this necessitates a multi-pronged strategy that will ensure the opening of the technology platform for use by new entrants and ensuring that diverse suppliers provide services across the different elements of the subscription value chain. So it's very broad and it doesn't really set out specifics of what they might do,
talking
in broad terms, which I suppose is the point of a discussion document, because then opens you up to all sorts of discussions without being prescriptive. So I suppose in that regards, the discussion document is quite good. So I ran a story on this week, and I thought the comments that we were getting on the story were actually particularly interesting from our readers. And the suggestion from one reader and taken further by others was that the best way of ensuring that there is greater competition and ensuring that new entrants into the market work is by divorcing MultiChoice from SuperSport.
Mm.
And we've spoken about this on the podcast before.
Yeah.
Do we need a regulatory intervention that comes in and actually physically separates these entities, actually separates them from a shareholding perspective possibly, perhaps a lesser separation like we saw in the case of Telkom and OpenServe, which wasn't a regulatory intervention, but modeled on what happened in the UK with OpenReach and BT. Certainly other markets have done this. I'm not enough of an expert to be able to say whether those interventions have been particularly successful or not.
Yeah.
But it raises an interesting question. Do you, I mean, MultiChoice without doubt has been a very successful company, and they've been successful, I would argue for the most part, because they've made some very smart decisions. Mm. For example, when they were launched, they could have gone analog like the SABC did for satellite services. They didn't. They went digital, even though it was expensive and very early days. And that proved to be a huge success, and the SABC's AstroSat service failed because consumers weren't interested in it. Mm. And it wasn't only the technology, it was also the content on offer. But you know, they made the right choices down the line. They invested a lot of money, and they reaped the rewards of that investment and those smart decisions that they made. It could, of course, also be argued that they were given a favored nation status by the national body government and getting, you know, licenses and that sort of thing. And of course, there's truth to that as well. Mm. I think especially around the licensing of Mnet back in the mid 1980s. But the question is, this is a very successful company. At what point do you step in and in effect punish the company by saying, well, okay, you've been too successful, let's separate SuperSport from you because we think that will help the market? Now, I guess it's where you sit on the ideological spectrum. If you're a libertarian, I would imagine that you would argue that no, the regulator shouldn't get involved. This is a successful business. And if they start doing things that are not in the interests of customers, then it'll open up a window for a competitor to come in and compete with them. If you're perhaps more on the left side of the ideological spectrum, you'd probably argue that regulation is necessary. When companies become too dominant, a regulator like the Competition Commission in South Africa, or in the US it would be the Federal Trade Commission, or one of those, or the Department of Justice, must step in and split the company. And certainly we've seen this in markets, including America, which is the home of capitalism. We've seen entities like the Justice Department, for example, stepping in and imposing sanctions on companies like Microsoft when they became very dominant in the internet market, for example, with Internet Explorer. So the question is, and I'm actually not sure what the solution is. I mean, I think I kind of sit halfway between the camp that argues that you should regulate and the camp that says don't regulate. I mean, I can see the arguments on both sides. Certainly, imposing regulations on a market can skew a market, and we very often see that regulation has unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you just allow the markets unfettered to continue, without any sort of intervention, are we not going to see a situation where a dominant operator continues to just keep all competition out of the market by virtue of its size?
And, like we've seen with MultiChoice. I mean, that's kind of what it seemed like up until this point, right?
Indeed. And is that really in the interest of consumers? Now, the argument is made that SuperSport is the biggest impediment because South Africans are sports mad. I mean, you and I don't watch a huge amount of sport, but we're probably the exception to the rule.
I'm a big fan of Springbok rugby, but it's impossible to watch if you don't have DSTV. So I kind of feel that pain. Where do you draw the line, and what's in the interest of the people? The question is this all about SuperSport? Is this really about the sport licensing? Mm. I mean, yeah, then definitely something needs to be done so that more people have access to that.
Yeah, so I guess you sit a little bit more left on the ideological spectrum in that regard.
Well, I don't really care who owns the licenses as long as there's easier access to it. Yeah. We know that MultiChoice hasn't yet made available any of those channels on a separate pay-for-use basis or even streaming it online unless you're a subscriber.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is that Top TV, which is now called StarSat, lodged a complaint at the Competition Commission over this very issue. They were trying to license, I think, the soccer channel, so what's that, SuperSport 3. From SuperSport, and I may be missing segments of this because I read the complaint quite some time ago, but I think it was lodged about 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they apparently went into negotiations with management at SuperSport, and management at SuperSport was quite keen to license them the channel, and then it was allegedly blocked by MultiChoice management. So the next level
interesting,
up.
Yes.
So they lodged a complaint at the Competition Commission, but it's gone dead quiet. Nothing happened. Why? Apparently they haven't thrown it out, but they also haven't investigated it.
If I can sit on the fence here, and we've spoken on this podcast so often about SABC's debacle in the content arena, a lot of these things blow off each other. I mean, if SABC can be a stronger contender, You know, it's really the only platform that can compete with DStv at the moment, really.
Yeah. And again, you mentioned the SABC. Should a regulator be punishing MultiChoice because the SABC is so useless that they can't compete with MultiChoice for sports rights? And we know that the SABC is in a state of disarray. And we know that they've lost a lot of sports rights to the to MultiChoice. In fact, they've had to go sort of begging to MultiChoice for access to some of the soccer. Do we impose regulations on MultiChoice because MultiChoice's competition is useless?
Yeah, it's a difficult question to answer. If only we had a time machine, go back in time and fix the SABC and actually see what it would have turned into. But we need to look at what the rest of the world has done too in these kind of scenarios. We're certainly not unique.
The answer is we need to learn what's happened in other markets and apply the best regulations. But you know, the worry is that we impose regulation and then it has the effect of distorting the market in other ways. And I'm ideologically speaking, I'm against punishing companies because they're successful.
No, I agree. It's a very very thin gray line here. But what is in the interest of the people and the customer? I guess if you're a MultiChoice customer, you're fine. If you're not, like many of us out there, you do lose out on. And we are specifically talking about sports because we can get other content anywhere these days. Really, the local stuff a lot of the local content that's not available on the other streaming platforms. But the local content in terms of sport, I mean, it is a backbone of many South Africans' lives.
It's true. I suppose the question is whether. Whether having access to sport is and our national teams is in the is a something the government should be ensuring that people have access to, or is sport something that's an entertainment value add that people should expect to pay for?
I guess you have to ask the sponsors that question.
Someone has to pay for it at the end of the day. It's a very expensive business. You can't provide it for free. Someone has to pay for it.
No, for sure.
Someone
has
to sponsor it, and once sponsorship gets involved, broadcasting rights, it tends to migrate to pay television platforms.
I mean, I think what MultiChoice should really do is do what ESPN's been doing for so many years, is pay per view. You know, you pay for, if I want to watch a Springbok rugby game in the Springbok season only, you know, I'd pay $100 to watch the game, $50, whatever that may be. I mean, you need to look at kind of the value of such a service.
Yes.
And that's how you make it available to more people as well, and potentially, let the customer win a little bit in terms of sport.
I mean, the funny thing is there's actually a nice business here for the super sport guys. If they were not part of MultiChoice, I'm sure they'd love to go to market and supply channels to a whole range of platforms.
And license. I mean, that's how people make money. License your content.
And that's what we see in other markets. So maybe it's just a case of the regulator coming in and saying, MultiChoice, you have to license access to your channels on a fair, non-discriminatory basis.
Provide a model that allow that kind of service.
I think that may be the answer, rather than coming in and saying, well, you can't own Supersport, it needs to be an independent entity. Maybe you simply create a rule that says, and we've seen rules like this across the industry, the regulator, across the telecommunications industry, there has to be, just simply state, you have to make the Supersport channels available on a fair, non-discriminatory basis to your competitors. That's probably the solution.
Let's submit this proposal and just get it through.
Well, we don't want to make the news. We'll leave the ANC to do that at their national policy conference in June. But certainly none of what we've discussed here is contained in the policy document, which is interesting. But I guess they didn't want to go into specifics. Hopefully, we'll see some more specifics around these what's proposed in this document or suggested in this document at that policy conference. But some other interesting stuff in here. I mean, they talk about potential regulation of over-the-top services in the South African market.
That old chestnut, we've heard that before.
Yeah,
haven't we?
I'm not sure that's the best idea. And no doubt they're getting that from the operators here inside, the broadcasters here in South Africa. I know MultiChoice is very keen for Netflix and others to be regulated in the same way that they are. Whether that's in the interest of consumers or the interests of the local broadcasters is open to question.
I would like to see where the money flows with this. I mean, the cynic that I am.
Of course, I
always think somebody's got something to gain. You know, if they want to change something,
of course,
just dramatically.
Rule 101 of journalism:
where does
follow the money.
Follow the money.
Anyway, let's move swiftly along. I had a fascinating chat with Matt Kavanagh. He's a Durban-based software developer. He develops for Windows Phone, Windows Mobile.
One of the last few remaining Windows developers.
Yes, I joked with that about that with him when I spoke to him a bit earlier this afternoon. But he's doing some really cool stuff. He's a Windows developer more broadly. Mm-hmm. He's developed some of the apps that you've probably used, things like the Weather SA app. He's developed the SuperSport app. He's done a lot of work on Plex,
The great streaming service.
So he's done quite a lot of work on the Windows clients for Plex.
Oh, fantastic.
Durban-based developer. And the reason I was speaking to him was that he last year discovered a major problem, a major security hole on the Sterkinicor website, which exposed almost 7 million customers' details.
Including mine, because I was a customer on that platform.
Ah, right. Yeah. Okay. To anyone who knew how to get around and this vulnerability, which it was fairly trivial to get around. It included Sterkinicor saving users' passwords in plain text.
Oh, what a mistake! What a rookie error!
Rookie error, yeah. So Matt Kavanagh did the responsible thing, and he did not disclose this publicly. Until he had revealed all of his information to Sterkinicor's team, and until Sterkinicor had a chance to fix it. Only once that had happened did he disclose the information publicly, which led to a number of press reports this week. Okay. Now, let me not go into a lot of detail, because I actually asked Matt in the interview exactly how he discovered this vulnerability and how he was able to get in and what he found, and also how he did the disclosure. So let's have a listen to Matt. Matt, you presented at a recent conference about a major security hole in Sterkinicor's website, and Sterkinicor's old website. You disclosed the problem to them last year already and gave them time to fix the problem before revealing it to the wider world at a recent conference called DevConf 2017. Before we get there, though, I want to find out a bit about you. You're a Durban boy, right? That's my hometown. Whereabouts in Durban are you?
So I'm in the Musgrave area. I was born in a tiny town called Escort.
I know Escort, yes.
Yeah. So that's where the bacon comes from.
Yeah, yeah.
So I lived there until college and then moved to Durban, and I've been here since.
Okay, cool. Now, Matt, you're that, if you don't mind me calling you that, that rare specimen, a Windows Phone developer, and of course a Microsoft developer more broadly. You've got a small development business in Durban. What's that called?
It's called Rogue Code.
Rogue Code. Okay. And what do you guys do?
Okay. So a few years ago, I started this thing, and we were doing Windows Phone apps, and that was back in the Windows Phone 7 days. And then we started Windows Phone 8 stuff and Windows stuff when they kind of merged those platforms. And then we were doing UWP, the Universal Windows Platform apps. But for the past 2 years, we've been working on a game. So we haven't been doing as many apps anymore. Obviously, the market has sort of shifted away from that.
Mm.
But one thing we did write, even though Windows isn't the most financially viable thing to do right now, I think we were one of the few companies that actually made a lot of money, because we were pretty much the only ones doing it. So,
right.
So yeah, people ask me, like, why did I do that, and was it a mistake? No, I think, like, financially, it worked really, really well, simply because we were, like, the only ones there.
Okay. So were developing – what apps did you develop on the Windows Mobile or Windows Phone platform?
The few that you would have heard of would be SuperSports.
Okay.
DSTV. Weather Africa, Weather SA.
Oh yes, I know that app well. Yes,
branding you've seen.
Mm.
And then personally, I worked for about 2 years for a media company called Plex.
Oh, yeah, I know Plex. I use their software, yes.
Yeah, so I was working on their Windows platform apps, so Windows Phone and Windows Desktop.
Okay, that's great. So you must have watched with great interest and probably great frustration as well as the Windows Phone / Windows Mobile environment changed, the acquisition of Nokia, the strategic decisions that Microsoft took around the platform. What is your view of Windows on mobile? Does it have a future at all, or where do you see it going?
So I've sort of been optimistic the entire time, and I've really tried to keep that view. But as time goes on, Microsoft is proving that they'll do everything in their power to do the wrong thing. So I still use a Windows phone. I've got a 950 XL.
Yeah.
My wife still uses a 1020. And so I'm still using it now, but Windows 10 for mobile is kind of very hit and miss. There's a lot of things I still really like, but there's also a lot of problems. My phone still restarts multiple times a day.
Oh dear.
Sometimes when I get a notification, it pops up and then freezes, playing the notification sound for about a minute until it restarts.
That's not good.
When my wife opens her camera, it usually freezes and often loses photos. When she's in WhatsApp, she'll send me about 100 messages that all say P, like the letter P, sometimes with like two P's. So I'm still optimistic about the Windows platform in general.
Right.
But my next phone, it may need to be Android, or maybe I'll try a BlackBerry.
Right. Okay. maybe not go BlackBerry. I think that may be going the same way.
I was joking.
No, of course. Matt, you're now developing a game. You say you've been in development for about 2 years. It's an Xbox game, right?
Well, Xbox and PC.
And PC, okay. And it's called Vicious Attack Llama Apocalypse. I just love the name.
Well done.
I love the name. What's it about?
So many people ask me. I usually tell them some backstory about some childhood trauma with a llama attacking my mother. But really, I can't remember. I can't remember if it was my wife that came up with it, or me, or one of my friends that was working with us at the time. Yeah, I have no idea. And the title, obviously, we called it Vicious Attack Llama Apocalypse because it just rolls off the tongue. It's just so nice and concise.
It's certainly memorable. I'll put it that way. When is it coming out?
Some people
Matt?
Struggle to remember it, but so our trailer says 2016.
Okay.
It looks like we may not hit that because that was 3 months ago.
Right.
But we've been through one round of certs on Xbox.
Okay.
That's sort of the process where they make sure that you followed all the rules and everything.
Okay.
And we'll probably go into final certs to submit to the store in probably 2 months.
Okay.
I've been saying that for about a year, but this time I think it's for real.
Sounds good. I look forward to checking it out when it eventually gets released. I just love the name. I think it's probably going to sell thousands of copies just based on that name. But Matt, the main reason we're chatting today is about Sterkinicor. Now, I see a couple of websites have now run a story on this, but you last year uncovered a major problem around security on the Sterkinicor website, one that resulted in the exposure of almost 7 million user account details, potentially. Just give us a bit of background on how you came across this problem and what you did about it once you did.
So I want to start off by saying that it's a very easy thing to find. I've said it on my blog and a bunch of other places, but it's anyone that has mild knowledge about just intercepting web traffic, which is most web developers, would have been able to at least see that they were doing something weird. Because the way they were transferring data, sort of, they were doing it in a custom way that straight away raises red flags. So when I saw that, and saw they had what seemed to be some sort of custom encryption, that straight away was like telling me, hey, you should look into this further. So I noticed that, and I've detailed it on my blog, but basically they were sending information backwards and forwards, and they were using client-side encryption to send that information. So they weren't using HTTPS. They had, I don't know if it's a custom encryption algorithm or if they did it themselves, but embedded in the Flash, they had all their encryption keys, and in all the apps, the vulnerability was with the backend APIs. It just happens that the Flash was the easiest to decompile, get the encryption keys. And from there, I was able to send requests back and forwards and basically mimic what the Flash did. And that's not a major problem. I mean, all that would have allowed me to really do was use their API in the way that the website intended, which isn't a problem. The problem came in where after you log in, it does a second call to the API. So first when you log in, it checks your credentials and it comes back with an ID saying like, hey, these are valid. Your user ID is like 1,000.
Okay.
Then it does a second API call. Now the second API call is to get your profile data. Your profile data is stuff like your first name and addresses and whatever. The problem here was that they did no authentication on that. So with an ID of any given user, you could send that ID and it would return their profile details. Now, that was sort of very easy to get everyone's profile details because their IDs were from 0 to like 6.5 million.
Right.
It wasn't some random GUID or something. You could just iterate through the numbers and fetch all their profile details.
Right.
The second problem, that would have been bad enough in a normal system. But the second problem was that they seemed to be just returning the entire database field for that user, which includes their password. And that password is stored in plain text because I guess they've never read a textbook. but yeah, that means they're storing passwords and plain text in the database, which you should obviously never do. And then worse than that, they're returning it to anyone that asks.
So there's no indication. You mentioned in your blog, by the way, the blog is blog.roguecode.co.za, where Matt has gone into a lot of detail about exactly how he discovered this exploit and what it could do. So the stuff was being stored in plain text, so anyone could get access to it. Do we have any indication that anyone with malicious intent did so?
So StoicNickel sent out to you and a few other sites, they sent out sort of a generic response that, I can't remember the exact quote, but it basically said that since I access the data, they can confirm that no one accessed it after that. So, yeah,
we have to take their word for it, right?
Well, yes, yeah. I imagine that's completely true, but that doesn't mean that in the years that this has existed before me, no one has. And as I said in my blog, they gave no indication to me that they detected that I was doing this at all. They didn't seem to get alerted when I was causing downtime or when I was doing so many requests. So I imagine that means they also don't have any logs or anything. So yeah, they don't know and I don't know. There's basically no way we can know whether someone has this information. But
so we should probably assume that someone does have it then.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like a big deal for a user to go change their password, which, sure, by the way, is what you should do. And you should never use the same password in multiple places. But yeah, it's not a big deal to go do that. So yeah, you may as well just assume that someone does have it.
Mm.
But as far as Stokinicor, yeah, we don't know.
We don't know.
Maybe no one has it, and that would be great.
Sure. So what exactly was leaked? Email addresses? What other data was available on the server? Were there any credit card numbers?
No. So they returned, I've got a list of the fields here. It's your first name, last name, your gender, your email address, phone numbers for home and cell phone, residential addresses, postal addresses, a bunch of details for your cards and stuff, not your credit cards, your, you know, the little Stokinicor.
Loyalty card.
Yeah, loyalty cards, password, your race. They seem to have demographic for some users and language. So basically there's no credit card details, and that's great. That would have been a major problem.
Yes.
But the concern here is that if someone has this data, that they have your password. Now, a lot of people share passwords,
yes,
and obviously you should never do that.
Indeed.
But I imagine that the sort of people that have Stokinicor accounts, now obviously lots of people do, but it would be people that have just signed up because they wanted to watch a movie and not necessarily technically inclined.
Sure.
Now, those sorts of people, I would assume that a lot of them have shared their passwords. So the concern here is that someone with malicious intent can look at their email address, look at their password, and go log into their account. And then further than that, if they work out other sites that they're a part of, they can try use that same password in those places.
So they could get into your Facebook or your LinkedIn or your Gmail or any other website where the password is the same, and then they could potentially do a lot more damage.
Yeah, so once you have access to someone's email account, it makes it a hell of a lot easier to get into other systems as well, because a lot of places confirm your identity by emailing you.
Mm. Yes, indeed. So I think the message here is clear. If you think you have were compromised in this, if you think there's even a possibility that you were compromised here, you must go and change your Stokinicor login credentials or password immediately. But Matt, there's actually a way you can check this, right? You can actually find out if your email was compromised in this whole process.
Yeah. So sorry, I just want to clarify something you just said.
Sure.
You shouldn't go change your Stokinicor password. When they moved over to their new system, they reset everyone's password comically to everyone's birthday.
Uh-huh.
But
change your password everywhere else.
Change your password everywhere else that where you've used that same password. So if you use the same password for Stokinicor and your Hotmail account, go change your Hotmail account.
Hmm. I guess the message here, and I've been very bad at this in the past, I must say, Matt. I've had the same password across multiple accounts, but just in the last few months, I've started using a password manager called Dashlane, which I find very good, and it really does strengthen your security online. It's actually the worst thing you can do is share passwords across accounts, especially in light of the fact that these servers, and it's not just Stokinicor. We hear about these breaches. We hear what's happened with Yahoo in the US. It's a frequent occurrence, so it's just madness actually keeping this using the same password across any website.
Yeah. So then back to what you're talking about a way to find out which systems
yes.
have been breached. There's a website called Have I Been Owned, and I'm sure you'll include a link to that. Owned, spelled with a P. But that's run by a guy called Troy Hunt, and what this website does is he sort of catalogs the data breaches around the world, and wherever he can get a dump of data, he puts it into the service, and you can actually subscribe. So you sign up with your email address, and whenever he adds a dump that's happened on whatever website that includes your email address, it actually sends you a notification and tells you, like, hey, Stokinicor data has been dumped by someone. you should go change your password or whatever the case may be. That's definitely worth signing up
for. It's definitely worth checking out. So it's have I been owned, or where the O is a P, or have I been pwned.com. And I went there and I plugged in my Gmail address and discovered, I was glad to see that Stekinik wasn't included in the list, but I did discover that my credentials had been compromised on both Dropbox and LinkedIn in hacks that occurred, I think, about 3 or 4 years ago. So it's worth going to check out, even if you just want to, even if you're not even a Stekinik customer and you've never booked a movie on the Stekinik website, it's actually worth going to this website just to check out whether your email address has been compromised at any other service.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff happens so often. There's about six different things that pop me on that site when I put in my email address. So it's worth doing.
Okay, great stuff. Excellent, Matt. Well, thanks for chatting to us on the podcast today. I really appreciate your time.
No problem. Thank you.
Well, that was Matt Kavanagh. I've subsequently received a statement from Stekinik, Rechat. I'm going to read it. It's just four paragraphs. It came through actually just minutes after I hung up the Skype call earlier with Matt. And they say, in response to recent media reports of an information security infringement, Stekinik would like to place it on record that the incident in question referred to its previous and now redundant website. Okay, that we know. In September last year, the company was made aware that its website and some customer information had been made vulnerable. It was alleged that the personal information of some users, limited to details such as Stekinik login username and plain text passwords, so no credit card information, was potentially vulnerable. Stekinik has not previously or currently ever held the details of 7 million accounts, as has been reported in the media. Interesting. At the time, Stekinik was in the process of testing and phasing in a completely new and far more secure point of sale and digital platform, the Vista platform and website. Hopefully nothing to do with Windows Vista.
Yeah, please.
Efforts were immediately redoubled to migrate to these new platforms. Starting on the 11th of October 2016, the company removed all the customer information off the old platform, ensuring that it was no longer susceptible to any potentially unscrupulous cyber activity. While the migration to the new system... With the migration to the new system, we can confidently assure all our customers that the newly installed HTML digital platforms are significantly more advanced and robust, and that all customer data is fully secure. Famous last words. As with any secure digital platform, Stekinik strongly recommends its customers that they change their password regularly. This can be done by going to stekinik.com and following the Forgot My Password steps. As an additional security measure, and as I discussed in the podcast with Matt, it is also recommended that customers change their password if they use the same or similar passwords on any other digital platforms. Stekinik Theatre's investment in this new system reinforces the fact that the company takes very seriously its responsibility to ensure the security of its customers' personal information at all times. I would go as far as to suggest that last year and prior to this event, they were not taking their customers' security very seriously.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's still their fault, but you have to look at the developers here. I mean, we know what kind of day and age, or developers know what kind of day and age they're developing apps in or software in.
Taking shortcuts
like that is definitely not the way to go. And maybe put it down to rookie mistake. You know, I don't know what technologies they use in the back end, but certainly shouldn't be the case. You know, anybody worth their salt should know this. But, you know, on the Stekinik topic, the app hasn't been working for a while. I've had a few friends who've been complaining about it. So there's something wrong on their digital side, I think.
Even maybe. With the new one. The new app.
The new app. Is there a new app?
I don't know.
My existing app that I've been running for the last 2-3 years just stopped working.
Oh,
and I've got a few friends who's also, they couldn't book online. So the app just basically says they can't connect to server.
Oh, dear. Not good.
So, yeah, let's hope they sort those out. They had a great app at one point and a good service, but
not
at the moment.
Anyway, as Matt mentioned in that podcast, Have I Been Pwned is the website to go check out. Type in your email address and find out if you were among those who fell victim to this.
To this and any other real
big and any other one,
security
yeah.
breach. Yeah.
And I was surprised when I typed in my details this week to discover that I'd been fallen victim to a couple of problems. I think LinkedIn and Dropbox.
LinkedIn, Dropbox is my two ones. Yeah. I do go check that site out like once every year or so.
Okay.
But yeah, we both use password managers. So the passwords that I use now, very long characters. I don't even know them myself. So they get changed fairly regularly.
Right. We need to take an ad break. We'll be back right after this.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad.
My game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox fiber. Now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to Talk Central. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan? Are you ready for St. Patrick's evening tonight?
Oh, is it St. Patrick's Day today?
Yeah, we didn't bring beer to celebrate because I think we took a vow not to drink beer while we're podcasting. Yeah. Ready for the green beer.
No, I actually got to get to bed very early tonight because I'm getting up early to drive to the coast. So I will not be partaking on St. Patrick's Day, but I'm sure...
I'll have one for you.
You're going to have a few craft beers for me. Please do. What are you going to be drinking tonight?
I like to keep it traditional on St. Patrick's Day. I'm going to go with some Guinness.
Oh, nice.
And depending on
love Guinness.
Yeah, I love it. Guinness and my good old any IPA on tap.
Nice. Have you ever had Kilkenny?
Love Kilkenny. That was one of my favorite beers for a very long time.
Yeah. Lovely stuff.
Still delicious. Very creamy. But yeah, I actually prefer for Guinness now. Guinness on tap is...
Guinness is great, yeah. Guinness
and obviously the good old SAB Milk Stout.
Milk Stout is also nice.
I love it. Thirsty now, but let's get on with the show.
Yeah, let's finish the show so we can have a beer. Right, so Cell C's results this week, they've swung to a profit, 540 million rand net profit.
Wow.
This is a company that lost, I forget the number, I think it was around 5 or 6 billion rand last year at a net loss level. So certainly doing a heck of a lot better than they have, which I guess bodes well for their future. With the restructuring going on and all of the rest of it. Interesting they announced this week that, or said to me in an interview this week rather than announcing it, that they are keen to engage with Vodacom to expand their roaming agreement from 2G and 3G now onto 4G LTE as well, which would be a major boon if they can get it for their customers.
Yeah.
Because, of course, Vodacom has the biggest LTE network in the country. They've been very aggressively rolling out. I've been actually looking at their website the other day, the coverage map the other day, and they've got LTE everywhere now. It's amazing. Even the smallest towns have got 4G LTE.
Yeah, I love it. I've been noticing a lot of LTE on my phone popping up.
But you're on MTN, aren't you?
I'm on MTN, yeah. So, I mean, but still, having LTE
across South Africa is great. They're also expanding, yeah. Those are negotiations. One hopes that Telkom is going to do the same with MTN at some point because they only currently roam on 2G and 3G. But we'll have to see about that. But positive news from Cell C, and I guess positive for Blue Label Telecoms as well, which is buying 45% of the company. I went to the launch this week of a new store. It's a warehouse, really, in Midrand called MyTech Direct. They describe themselves as a sound and technology store, I think.
I love the sound of that already.
And it's amazing. This place is absolutely amazing, Richard. You've got to get out there. They're open on Saturday, so if you get a chance
maybe
this weekend.
Maybe I should pop around there, yeah.
They're just before Neotel's offices, if you know the Midrand area, as you're heading north towards Pretoria on the right-hand side. So you'd take the... you'd probably take Allendale as the best and then loop your way back around past Neotel and you'll find their offices there. Quite hard to spot at the moment because they don't have a sign outside, but they've got this huge warehouse. So this place is massive. They've built an entire stage inside there and they can hold concerts. They've got a huge area where they do manufacturing. They build stage equipment. And then on the retail side, they've got this what is undoubtedly the biggest music store in South Africa. They say it's the biggest in Africa.
Nice.
And they said, in fact, at the launch that they believe it's one of the biggest in the world. And they've got if you're a musician, this place is heaven. And of course, we use a lot of audio gear. And I had a chat with a technical salesman there by the name of John. If you go there, I can highly recommend because he really knows his stuff. We bought some cool podcasting gear, which, for example, allowed us to do this Skype interview earlier in good quality. It's geared towards musicians, but it's also if you're a music lover, particularly if you're an audiophile, you'll love this place. I mean, they've got all the latest high-end amps. They've got a Sennheiser specialist store inside. Apparently, it's only the second of these in the world. I tried on a pair of Sennheiser. I should have written the model number down before we recorded this podcast. But I tried out the Sennheiser's top end headphones, which retail for 24,000 rand.
Sure, mind blowing. Buy a few of those for podcasting.
Yeah, so I've got a pair of QC25s, which I'm wearing right now, in fact, to record this podcast, and love the quality of my Bose QC25s. Mm. And then I tried out these Sennheisers. Wow, man, I wanted to buy them on the spot. Unbelievable. So comfortable on the ear, and the audio quality was just mind-blowing, as you'd expect for 24,000 rand. Sure. If you're one of those who likes to spend a lot of money, maybe leave the credit card at home the first time you go there, just so you know what you're getting yourself in for. But they've got such a selection. I mean, I'm not a musician. I've got no rhythm at all, so I'm not even going to try and pick up a guitar or something, but the selection of keyboards and electric guitars and bass and wind equipment, you name it, they've got it there.
Oh wow, okay. So if they've got a robot light for my home disco and a mirrorball for my garage,
they might not have that. Or they might chase you out of the
shop.
They
might have the laser show.
they might have that. But some beautiful guitars as well. I mean, I don't know nothing about guitars, but I was looking at this beautiful Gibson electric guitar they had there retailing for 68,000 rand. Looked stunning. I actually wanted it on my wall. It was so beautiful. So they've got such a wide range selection there. So it's I just hope. I mean, the amount of money they must have invested in this place. I just hope that they make it back, because it's a big investment in what is a poor economy, in what is a relatively small market.
Mm. Music stores like that always remind me of old CD stores, vinyl stores. Yeah, it's a very particular kind of person that hangs out there. And I do frequent music technology stores like that quite often. Mm. There's a few around the area that I need to pick up some stuff. But they do tend to get a little bit scruffy after a while.
Yeah.
I hope this one, I'm looking at photographs here. I hope it keeps that veneer, because it looks very nice inside.
In fact, thanks for mentioning the photographs. If you're going to have a look at the podcast entry on the website, if you're listening to this through your podcatcher, we've posted a video of the warehouse, just to give you an idea of the scale of it. As well as a bunch of photographs that I took on the launch evening this week, just showing you the insides of the store. It's worth checking out, just to get the scale. The video in particular, I think, just shows you.
That's massive. They're flying a drone inside the warehouse. That should give you an idea.
It gives you an idea of the size of it. Is. So that's my Tech Direct. I will be spending, I suspect, a lot of money there. In fact, I've already spent quite a bit of money there. So I was the day after, I was the first sale.
Okay, fantastic.
Well, certainly the first sale that John made. So I bought something called a Radial Pro AV2, made in Canada. Beautiful little piece of equipment. I'm not even sure what you'd call it. I think it's a transformer of some description, but it really takes out any noise from the computer when you're doing Skype calls.
Cleans
up the audio beautifully and spits out this pro sounding audio.
It's a proper rugged looking device. I want to take it out in the field and just bash it around, put some scratches on it. It seems like it needs some.
It does.
Some history on it.
Yeah, it looks like a bit like that brick internet device they make up in Kenya.
Yeah, yeah.
Looks really rugged and but lovely stuff, and great service from John. I'm sure all the guys there know there.
That's what you want from a shop like that. You need somebody go in and they can explain to you exactly which cable you need, or if they can custom make it for you, even better.
No, it was brilliant. I took my gear there. I just put it all in a rucksack, went through there, and sat with him for an hour while we tested solutions and let's see how this one does. And
fantastic.
They really took the time to make sure that I was a happy customer and walking out of there with the product that I actually needed. Which you don't get too often in retail in South Africa. The guys just want to make a sale and they say, here, take this, bring it back if it doesn't work.
Exactly. But it seemed like this place has got a couple of brands that it sells, so it's obviously trying to get you the best product rather than selling you their own brand.
Yeah. And I mean, he gave me options as well, which was nice. He said you could buy this, at 20% of the price, but you're probably not going to get quite the same quality. And we sort of discussed the pros and cons of each and eventually settled on a product, but only after testing it and connecting to their internet and doing some calls over Skype and all that sort of thing. So very, very impressed. I've walked away with a good first impression, put it that way.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I do feel sorry for the smaller music stores, though, you know, with this behemoth now opening in Midrand.
Yeah.
There are a lot of the smaller guys around Joburg, and I think they may feel a bit of pain from this mega warehouse.
And it's a price-sensitive market, that audio market.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, musos don't generally have money.
Yeah, exactly. using 1 gig's money to pay for the next week's amp.
Yeah, or podcasters for that. Right. The last item of news that caught my attention this week is the news that Swatch, the Swiss watchmaker, is going to develop its own operating system for smartwatches. So they're saying, no thanks, Google.
Huh.
We're not going to develop it on Android. We're going to develop our own. Now, we don't know much about it yet, but I thought it's an interesting development. Swatch owns 18 brands, including Tissot, Omega watches, and others.
Oh, yes.
So they're a very big player in the Swiss watch market. And it comes in the same week that Tag Heuer took the wraps off its new smartwatch, which I think costs about $3,500.
Yeah.
So not cheap, but looks beautiful. I must say that Tag Heuer, the new Tag Heuer, if you go to Tag Heuer's website and have a look at it, I think it's the best looking smartwatch I've seen so far.
You're getting that kind of that history of the proper wrist watch,
yeah,
with some modern technology. I'm not sure whether doing your own operating system is the best way forward. We've seen what happens with companies that like to do their own operating systems.
Yeah,
maybe they come out with something that's superb and really works well.
Well, they said
the software really makes it right.
They do, and they said that they're prepared to license it to other vendors, and maybe that's even their ultimate game plan. Is to edge Google out of the market. So maybe it does make sense. Developing your own wearables OS can't be easy.
Yeah, and you're fighting the ecosystem. I mean, Android and iOS got very strong ecosystems, and your watch needs to work within an ecosystem.
That's true.
It might have limited functionality if you can, you know, if it will have some functionality if you can pair it with a smartphone, obviously, extended functionality, but it'll still only be playing within its own ecosystem, which doesn't have any other devices necessarily.
But maybe they've looked at what's happened in the Android world, where very few smartphone manufacturers actually make money if your name isn't really Samsung.
Sure.
Do you think
this is a showpiece? Maybe they're just doing it to keep up with the Joneses and just say, hey, we can do this as well.
Maybe. But it's a big investment to make just to say, hey, we can do it as well. I mean, developing an OS is an expensive business.
And you see your cheap developers and you do it on the fly. I mean, that could, we've seen that before as well.
Yeah. But an interesting one. We're watching this with a great deal of interest.
Yeah, arguably the best watchmaker or the most famous watchmaker in the world.
Swatch.
Swatch.
I've never owned one, have you?
No, never. Yeah. I prefer the digital watches. That Casio with the calculator on was my favorite watch.
Nerd.
Loved it. Could store telephone numbers.
Oh, true, yes. You could play games on that, couldn't you?
Not in the one that I had. Okay. That was before Snake.
Okay. So that's our news this week. Let's move on to our regular features. Let's start with our loser this week, because it's an obvious one, and we've picked her before, but she really just raised her hand again this week, and that's Butterbile Dlamini, the Minister of Social Development, for really getting slammed by the Constitutional Court over this social grants mess, which she had 2 years to fix and sat on her bum and did nothing. So, in effect, the Constitutional Court has put her department into effective administration. The court is now overseeing the social payments debacle. The government has failed to deal with the problem. It has literally sat on its hands. A NetOne UEPS technology subsidiary, Cash Paymaster Services, will continue with the contract for another 12 months until a new contract can be issued. And the court has now said it's going to supervise that whole process to ensure it happens. Because clearly the Department of Social Development can't be trusted to do it. In short, Butterbile Dlamini should be fired. But when your president is Jacob Zuma, you get protected.
Probably get promotion too.
Especially when Butterbile Dlamini leads the ANC Women's League, who is right in your camp in voicing support for Nkosi Sizana Dlamini Zuma as your chosen successor to you as president. So she gets to keep her job, even though she has failed spectacularly. So that's our loser of the week, Butterbile Dlamini. And our winner this week is Teraco, the data center operator. They've raised another 1.2 billion rand in debt financing from Absa to fund the expansion of their data center operations.
Nice.
Amazingly success story, Teraco.
Yeah, yeah.
They've just completed their new build at the new wing or new building, the new data center next to their current site on the campus that they're rapidly building in Isando. It's quite spectacular if you ever get a chance to go out there and have a look at
check it.
Check it
out, yeah.
But they've just broken ground on their new data center in Bredell, also on the East Rand. The speculation is that that new data center, which will be finished by the end of this year, so building it very quickly, is being built largely on order from a large international cloud vendor. No idea.
I wonder which rainforest that is.
it's either that or a certain software vendor from Seattle. Well, actually, they're both from Seattle, aren't they?
Yeah.
That would be my guess. Either Amazon or Microsoft. Could be Apple. That seems unlikely, though. Could be Google. Also seems a little less
likely. All of these companies do need data centers. I mean, what an incredible business to get into. A few years ago, not many big data centers around.
Yeah.
I think it was 4 or 5 years ago that we started seeing these independent buildings going up, housing these independent data centers.
Yes.
It's fantastic. I mean, it's the backbone of the internet.
Yes.
I should have invested in a few of those.
Yeah, no, very smart bunch of guys, the Teraco guys. They've done incredibly well. It's now owned by a company called Permira, which is a private equity business. So the initial managed guys, the angel investors, I think there were 18 of them who invested originally, have all cashed out. But this business continues to expand, and it's certainly one of the biggest success stories we've seen in the last 10 years in the IT space in South Africa.
Fantastic.
So that's our winner this week, Teraco. And if you ever do, anyone listening to this show, if you ever get a chance to go and check out the data center, it's well worth a tour. I'm sure some of the guys listening to the show probably work there. Hmm. So what's your pick this week, Richard?
So, you know, I'm an avid drone flyer.
I do.
I love it for photography. So one of the apps that I've been playing with for a while now, the drone that I use is the DJI Phantom 3. Absolutely superb superb drone. It's kind of outdated now. There's a few new models out. But I was looking around trying to find something to really enhance some of the functionality that I've got on this drone. I mean, obviously, you know, the electronics in there is absolutely fantastically sophisticated, and there's so much you can do with these.
Mm.
But the DJI Go app is a little bit limited. I mean, it allows you to do all the things you need to do, but when it comes to autonomous operation, it's a little bit limited. They don't really cater for that. Because it's a beautiful open platform like that, app by the name of Leechi, made by a company called VC Technology. It's a very popular application that you can get on iOS and Android, and it works with DJI's range of drones. Now, what this app does is it adds an incredible amount of autonomous operation and advanced functionality that you can use with your drone. So you use this drone instead of your DJI Go app, and you can do things like 360 photographs in the sky. I mean, it takes a series of, you can set it up to take a series of 30, 40, 50 photographs.
Wow.
You can stitch it together with some software that you've got. You can also kind of unlock features that's only available on some of the higher end Phantoms, like, you know, programming a flight path. So I can actually go on to...
you got one of the higher end ones?
I've got the Phantom 3, but it unlocks some functionality that... is also available in the Phantom 4. There's some features in the Phantom 4 that's natively not available in the Phantom 3.
Okay.
But with this app, you can do the same thing.
Oh, right.
Where was I? So it was a 360. One of the other things you can do is there's a online platform. It's called the Hub. So if you go to flyleechi.com/hub, you can actually, it's a Google Maps of sorts, and you can actually program a flight.
Yeah.
So if you want to fly around Emerentia Dam, you want to plan it, and you can put in your height, how fast it must go between points, and where it must end up. All you do is you flip your drone into autonomous mode, which is a setting on the controller, and you start the flight. I mean, it's absolutely incredible what you can do. I'm still unlocking a lot of the functionality because there is a lot you can do. I've been using it a lot for 360 photographs, which is fantastic. And there was one more thing. One of the things I started playing with this week is the app also allows you to put your drone into VR mode. So I've got a pair of goggles that I plug my phone into.
Yeah.
When I put this on my face, flip the switch, I can actually
see what the drone sees.
See a first person view from the drone's point
fantastic.
Of view. It's not super high res. I think it's 720p or 1080 because you're splitting your screen into two for both eyes. But it's fantastic. That's such a lot of fun to do if you want to just play around with your drone. I mean, there's only so many things you can do with your drone, right? But using this app, not only do you allow that functionality, but you can also then fly first person, which is a hell of a lot of fun. Put it in your wife's face and fly around a bit and get them to experience what it's like to fly a drone. And it's fantastic.
Yeah.
The app isn't free. I think I paid R450. It's $22 on the iOS store. And on Google Play, it's $339. But it's well worth it.
$339.
$22. So I think I paid about $440. But I've got an American.
Rand.
$440. But I've got an American iTunes account. So I think I paid a little bit more for it.
It sounds pretty cool. It's still worth the money. It sounds like I'm going to have to get myself a drone at some point.
Yeah, if you do this, I mean, like I said, the Phantom is a bit old school now, but the Mavic, the DJI Mavic that's out now, fits into your jean pocket almost.
Oh, right.
And it delivers similar type of footage quality, which is superb.
I'm surprised no one's flown a drone over the Saxon Wald Schabin yet.
If they can find it, yes. I think we're all searching for it. I've tried with the infrared, but I couldn't find anything. So that's it. Leechi, well worth if you've got a DJI Mavic, Phantom or Inspire.
Flyleechi.com, go check that out. It's pretty cool. My pick very briefly this week, I'm just picking it because it looks beautiful. You know the speed test app that everyone knows, the speed test app for your phone.
Use it all the time.
Yeah. So this is a speed test app, but it's done beautifully. It's as if Johnny Ive wrote it. It's called Meteor, and it's developed by the same guys who do an app called OpenSignal, which I think I've picked before on this podcast. OpenSignal is an app for cellular network geeks. It really tells you everything you want to know about your local tower and all the towers in the area and your signal strength and all the rest of it, and you know where which tower you connected to and all the rest of it. OpenSignal is an amazing app. Meteor is not the same thing. It's a speed test app, and it is just beautifully designed. It's literally got this little flying meteor on the screen, and depending on your speed, it shows you these wonderful animations of what your speed is like. You know, whether it's good or mediocre or awesome. I think awesome is the top option. And then it tells you, you know, what your Facebook access is like, whether it's good or bad, and all that sort of thing based on certain apps. So it's really a consumer level thing. So it's not aimed at people who understand megabits per second and kilobits per second. It's aimed at people who really just want to know whether their internet connection is any good. And I think we, working in the tech space, forget that, you know, you say 10 megabits a second to someone who isn't tech savvy, that doesn't really mean anything to them. This app is meant to address that, and that it'll tell you whether your internet connection is good or not.
Nice.
So it's called Meteor for Android. So probably not for the people who listen to this podcast, but maybe you want to install it in your mom's phone.
It's not available on iOS, I see.
It's only Android as far as I know, yes. And so I'll include a link to the Play Store with the entry on this podcast.
Nice.
And that, apart from our quiz results, is our show. So let's get right to that quiz. It was an easy quiz this week.
Yep.
Our first one, Cell C reported... Actually, this wasn't so... Guessing a number, I suppose, is not that hard. Not that easy, but we did answer it during the course of the show. Cell C reported a net profit for its 2016 financial year this week. How much was it? And we said we'd accept to the nearest 100 million rand. And the answer is 540 million rand.
The second question, Cell C is interested in expanding its roaming agreement with Vodacom to include... which mobile technology, and we mentioned that, 4G and LTE.
And the third question, the Constitutional Court this week ordered which company to continue paying social grants for a period of 12 months despite the contract being unlawful? And the answer to that one is Cash Paymaster Services, which is a subsidiary of NetOne UEPS Technologies.
And the fourth question, we wanted to know which politician found themselves in all sorts of hot water over a tweet about colonialism this week? And the answer is Helen Ziller.
Helen Ziller. Sure. Did you see that tweet?
Yeah, I did.
She really put her foot in it. And our last question this week. Leaks have revealed the name of Samsung's AI assistant, which is expected to be introduced with the Galaxy S8 later this month. And we've got less than 2 weeks to wait till we see that phone. I can't wait.
Mm.
What do the leaks suggest that this AI assistant is going to be called? And the answer to that question is Bixby. B-I-X-B-Y.
What an odd name.
I suspect they chose it in part because it stands out, and that you can't just use an ordinary word because you're going to hey Bixby and your phone's going to wake up. So they had to choose something that doesn't sound
clever,
like another word.
For sure. Not like hello Google.
I think Alexa is much sexier than Bixby.
Yeah,
but,
yeah. Yeah, you need to relate to that.
Yeah.
A beautiful name would do that, yeah.
Mm. Siri doesn't do it for me either, though. Mm-mm. Siri.
Although Siri is very futuristic sounding, you can speak. Does, I can speak to my spaceship on the other side of Mars, saying, "Hey Siri, take us back home."
So what do we got now? We've got Siri, Bixby, Cortana, Google. Google should come up with a name for its one. What else is there? I think that's about it, really.
Did you say Echo?
Alexa. Alexa, Echo. Siri, Bixby, Cortana. Cortana is also a bit ugly.
Mm.
Bixby, maybe it'll grow me. I don't know. We'll see.
Sounds like a pet name. Bixby, come here.
Your phone gets up and walks towards you.
maybe that's going to be the launch plan.
Maybe that's the feature they haven't revealed yet. It hasn't leaked yet. Anyway, on that note, I'm not here next week, so this podcast will be taking a break. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah. We'll be doing some talking about Apple, because they're apparently going to be doing some nice announcements.
Yeah. I think that's, the rumor is that the iPad, a new iPad announcements have been moved forward to later this month.
I think next week or next 2 weeks, I think we're going to see some stuff from Apple.
Yeah, so we'll probably be talking Apple in the next show. I'm looking forward to seeing what they come up with next on the iPad front, because I think the iPad Pro was a bit overpriced, and I think the market shunned it a bit.
Mm. I think once technology catches up, I mean, that, you know, a powerhouse iPad is what we're going to be seeing at a good price.
Hopefully. Apple will never really
read it. Yeah, no, true.
As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, we love getting your mails. We do read all of them. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. Keep them coming. From Rechad and myself, until next time, take care. Ciao.